It's the New York Ska Jazz Ensemble with Boogie Stop Shuffle. Hello out there. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. It is Tuesday, December the 24th, and we're picking up from where we left off with each other just yesterday. We began taking a look at this year that is easing its way out as another brand new one eases its way in. Today, of course, you know it's Tuesday, and Tuesday we have open forum, but today I'd like to do open forum with a twist. We'll be taking a look at the year that will soon come to a close and ushering in 2014, a brand new one that will have its own story to tell. We'll be doing our own version today of the State of the Union. From your point of view, which issues, events, or people would you say had the greatest impact on our lives in the United States? As the first part of the task, you are to make an argument not only to justify your position, but also to tell us why you stick with that position in the face of criticisms of whatever it is your choice is. So, for example, if you say that you think the greatest impact was made by President Obama, then I would expect you to tell us what the major criticisms of Obama had been for the year 2013. And just to say, overcome those criticisms with your own convincing point of view. It is your position. Defend it. There's no right or wrong. It's just what it is you're thinking and how you're thinking. That's what we want to do today. So, two things. Let's just go over that again, the ground rules. We're doing our State of the Union. By this, I mean, by the time we're done with this program, we should get a sense of where people are, how you stack up 2013. You know, where does 2013 fit in our consciousness? And what were the major things that just brought themselves to your attention in a profound way, and just give us an idea of what other people might be thinking, even if you take the exact opposite position. Let us know what some of the major criticisms have been. But on the other hand, you can overcome those arguments with your own. Okay? So that's where we're going at 888-874-4888, and I'm expecting you to be as straight to the point as you usually are. And we want to get a sense at the end of this program. This will continue, by the way, this discussion. We are continuing until the end of the year. So it will morph itself into the next time we talk to each other, which is the day after tomorrow on the 26th. We won't be airing live tomorrow. So we'll return to this discussion on the 26th. But this is the task for today's open forum. It's still open forum. You do get to choose what your topic or issue or event or person will be. And your nomination, if you will, as a major impact on life in the United States. All right? So while you're getting your act together, your brain cells together, you're rounding them up, a couple of things that we need to let you know. Between now and Monday, you may not see on the PRN website the little blurbs that are posted with the tapes of the day. So that's not going to happen until Monday, because the person who does that deserves a rest and is trying to squeeze in 5 years worth of rest in a couple of days. So he'll be back on Monday and we'll catch up posting all of the archived material. So if you're missing archives when you go to the website and you don't see the current archive available, that is the reason. We'll catch up with everything on Monday when everybody's had enough to eat and drink and whatever, and come back to Monday as with business as usual. So that is one major thing that I wanted to talk about. All right. So 888-874-4888, let's get our State of the Union off to a good start. Who will do that? Let's see. Let's see you call in. Again, just to remind you, we're doing a State of the Union. I want to know from you, from your particular point of view. It doesn't matter what anybody thinks. It matters only that you make a credible argument. You select the issue, events, or people, or person that you think has had the greatest impact on our lives in the United States in the year 2013. You make an argument not only to justify your position, but also give us a clue as to why there might have been some criticisms. But even so, it does not at all discourage you from making this particular choice because you can prove, or the other way around, you can also disprove what critics have said. So it gives us a balanced view. All right? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Who's up? Let's go. I'm waiting on your call. You know, don't get too scared about it. You can't be wrong. There's no wrong here. It's just, let's hear what you're thinking. I'm going to ask you some questions, of course, along the way to help you develop your point of view, if I think you need a little prodding, or maybe to even get some reaction from people out there. Some people may or may not agree with you, and that's the beauty of it, especially when people may not agree with your point of view, and we'll have them make their points clear and see if we can find holes in their argument. Hello, Dolores from Ohio. Welcome.
Hello, Utrice.
Hello.
I'm calling because my main concern with our country and the situation it's in and has become is the power of corporate entities in our governmental system. Corporate power, I believe, has contaminated our government, and we as individuals no longer have control. And I've come to this after first becoming aware of how the economy has changed over the last 30 or 40 years, and I see now that there are no jobs in this country. Where have they gone? They've gone abroad. Who did that benefit? Not the people. It benefited the corporations, who then put their money in offshore accounts and ended up not having to pay taxes here. And then I look at our environment and how it is being totally destroyed. Our the fracking problems, the oil drilling in the Arctic, the destruction of the Gulf, oil spills up here in Michigan, north of us a year or two ago. They're not only have taken the jobs, they're destroying our environment with it, our world. And I see it as corporate power, which has been granted to them through decisions of the Supreme Court. I've read a few books on it. Tom Hartman is one of my favorite people, and he wrote an excellent book on what has happened with the Supreme Court decisions, which over the years have taken rights which were intended for human beings under our Constitution and have given those rights to corporate entities. They now are considered people, and therefore they have all the protections which were intended for human beings.
So with this position, therefore,
Pardon me?
You're clear about what is wrong. What, in your view, is the antidote?
Well, I've been active with a group here. Well, it's a national group. It's called Move to Amend, movetoamend.org. It is people, groups, large coalition of groups all across the country who want an amendment to the Constitution which says that corporations are not to be given the protections of human beings. This group, there's another one, it's called Free Speech for People. They're both working to educate people. We educated a group of us from our local Occupy Defiance group, got together, got signatures on a petition back in 2012. We got 866 signatures from our local town, and we got it on the ballot. We didn't get it till the 2013 election, but the people of our little community of Defiance, Ohio, made their voices heard that they want a constitutional amendment that says corporations are not people. Now, there are movements like this all across the country. Over 500 have been started. Many, there are 16, I believe, state legislatures who have made passed resolutions asking for a constitutional amendment. It's an extremely active group, but it needs more people. We need to get the word out there, and I thought I'd take this opportunity on your program. Thank you so much for everything you do, for providing a forum for all of us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and a very well presented position. Thank you so much, Dolores from Ohio. Annette from Washington, you're on the air.
Thank you, Trace. I'm sad to report that I've only been listening to you for the last 2 years. I wasn't aware of PRN before that, but I sure am glad I found you, and thank you for
thank
all
you.
That you do. I've been active since I was a teenager. I'm almost 60, writing and calling and visiting legislators about all the corporate issues, big pharma, big ag, the fossil fuel industry, spying. And I've come to the conclusion this year that the most important item on our plate is the warming of the Arctic. I've just become aware of a website called arctic-news blogspot that is mapping what's happening in the Arctic, and it appears that it's very possible that this planet, the entire planet, certainly the northern part, will not be habitable in less than 20 years because of these self-reinforcing feedback loops that are being pushed ahead by all of the global warming, and the methane that is being released from the Arctic now is it's just accelerating exponentially, and we really are in a runaway greenhouse gas situation now. So I encourage your listeners to check into Guy McPherson. His website is Nature Bats Last, and the Arctic News Blogspot, and inform ourselves, and we've been talking to our mayor and our county commissioners and the governor, just trying to feed it up from the bottom because the feds are working in the opposite direction. And the Obama administration's reaction to this, he put out a plan in the spring that called basically for the U.S. getting up there in a hurry to control the resources and take advantage of all of the stuff that's still under all of the liquids that are still in the rock there, which, of course, will make things so much worse. So we're in a death spiral, and there is an amazing six-week-old documentary called The Arctic Death Spiral, and the methane time bomb that's viewable on YouTube. So that's what seems most important to me. I think it has eclipsed all of these other things because without food to eat and oxygen to breathe, the other things kind of fall back a step.
Well, thank you very much, Annette, for your contribution today. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you, Therese.
Thanks. 888-874-4888. What is the state of your union? Our union. What is its state? What do you think are the major issues of the day? Basically, do you think that things are just fine and peachy keen, as they used to say in the 50s, peachy keen? Or do you find that there's a lot to be done and a sense, an increasing sense of anxiety about things and the first two calls that we've had so far? I mean, the common thing that was expressed is this feeling that you know, you feel like a little gnat against a huge swarm, you know. How much would your effort count against almost invincible odds? But when you have, for example, the first caller, Dolores, talked about the role of the Supreme Court in signing off that decision that says corporations have the same free speech rights as individuals, which is basically saying corporations are people, but it ruled that corporations have the right to free speech, and therefore they could influence political outcomes, they could influence political races, they could influence policy that we all have to live with, Obamacare, of course, being a glaring example. But what are you thinking? This is your time to spread the word about your thoughts and your observations and to put it out there, share them, see how people react to them, whether they think your position has merit or value or whether they differ with something else that they could offer us to consider. 888-874-4888. I'm looking to see who's calling next, and that would be Alex from New Jersey.
Hey there, Therese. This is Alex again.
Hello. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm the one with the weird conceptual stuff of let the sleepers be awoken and all.
I like that. But
right.
Which issue, event, or people would you say had the greatest impact on our lives in the United States, good or bad?
Well, again, I guess we came out of the Industrial Revolution, and we are now into the informational.
Oh, no, we passed the information age.
All
we're
right.
Now into the digital age,
okay.
And that is the age of unreal reality.
Okay, still information. And out of this information is going to come the next age, which would be the truth, finding out what the truth is, because out of information comes the truth. So then from that point, I think that we as humans would start understanding our power and our role in this consciousness. And then people will start waking up. And then to prove what I have to say is that since we're here now, that means that we have made it. And that's a huge positive note for us to look forward to for the rest of our lives. Because we as a species, if we never did survive, then we wouldn't have been. So saying
all right,
that...
But so far you're nice and philosophical, but bring me down to earth...
It's all good news that the truth
so
information.
So I want to ask you this question on your premise that
mm-hmm.
With the information will come truth. You really believe that?
Well, it isn't that I do believe it. It's because they did it to themselves anyhow. Look, the NSA and stuff and all, they have all the information, and it's categorized. So. That means all the information of all the corporations and who they are. So, if, you know, it's a two-sided sword blade. It's on both sides. So as they're able to use that information against us, the same information is being used against them. So,
okay.
Again, that's the beauty of it, is that they already done it to themselves. All the information is there. And then the truth will come out, and then will be marvelous, incredible things changing within ourselves, within our spirit. And then, and again, that's the truth, and that's the hope that we have because we're still here. That means we as a species or as an entity have made it. So that's my always great looking forward in the future. Yeah, things will be tough, and they always will be. Humanity always had to go through tough situations. Because, I mean, if you think about it, we as humans, even going back 100 years ago, it was beyond horror what people have to live the way they had to live. So in the last 100 years, we've been doing pretty well. So our species is able to take, our human race is able to take a lot of endurance, a lot of torture. And that's within all our genetic code. It's in there. We're able to withstand that. And if you look at all our generations, our, you know, our ancestors and stuff, they survive in hell. And now we've been doing pretty good, and I think we're used to it now. We're kind of comfortable with it. So then again, we would fight for that, and we'll look for ingenious ways to expand and using our information, our technology, to look for incredible things in the future. So that's why I really look forward to all this.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
A very thoughtful offering today, Alex. Thank you so much for it. 888-874-4888. It's always a good thing, you know, we have the benefit of 12 months of review. We've been through a lot, as Alex said. We've been through a lot that's not been very pleasant, but like he said, we've come through them. But what happens now with the information that we have? How is it to be used to better our circumstances and to make a lot of these unfair things just disappear? Or if not to disappear, to begin seriously to chisel away at them, because they are in the way of justice, they are in the way of fairness, they are in the way of humanity. A lot of what we are experiencing really is intentional inhumanity. There's no reason we should have hunger. It's so perfectly fixable. There is no reason to have hunger in the United States. None whatsoever. So the fact that we have hunger, in my view, is an intentional act to create a situation where people will be hungry simply to justify that zero-sum mentality I talked about a while ago, that in every scenario, you set it up that there would be winners and losers. And anything that is defined as a valuable resource, such as food, the operating idea should be that these things cannot be enjoyed by all. You know, it's too much of a good thing, so you have to limit whatever it is that is identified as a very important resource. And here we are, the greatest nation in the world that we're told all the time. And we have people who are starving, people who are homeless, you know, and people who are working and yet very poor. So I don't know how that works out. Hello, Agnes, you're on the air.
Hello, good afternoon, and all that wonderful stuff that's going on right now. I just listened to the young man before, and oh, the folly of youth, they say. The thing that's most troubling to me right now is that we do accept and take it as a win when it's not a win. The problem is when people do accept injustices that are happening and say, well, we got them and they got us, and we all go home and we're happy. Unfortunately, there are those that don't come out of the tragedies. I'm calling basically from New York because of the wonderful alternatics that you had on yesterday. I am here in New York, and we are in a major battle against the returning of William J. Bratton to the place of New York City Police Commissioner. I'm sure the young are feeling very upset and fragmented and disillusioned with the whole system, as they again, as with President Obama, was promised a change, and now they see all the same old thugs of us coming back into play.
So what, based on what was said yesterday and on your own observations, what really has to happen? What must begin to happen in a
The thing that did happen during this year, which was the most fantastic, I thought we had hurtled over such a mine with the organizing of the young and the middle-aged and the old, all to get together around police brutality, around Jim Crow mechanisms coming into our black and brown and poor communities, and it was the court case that happened here in New York City, the major court case, class action lawsuit against Stop and Frisk, that I thought was all the light at the end of the tunnel. But unfortunately, we see the pushback, and what has to happen is what I hope is happening, and that is that the those that fought so hard are mobilizing again to say we're not going to stop until we get what we want. The media has been hiding the pushback against the placement of William J. Bratton. They have not allowed people on air, even though a $7,000 ad was taken out in the Amsterdam News, if you saw what the Amsterdam News did. And we know how pictures, images, are a lot stronger than words in media, in the press. So the front cover had the National Action Network Memorial for Mandela with William J. Bratton front and center, sitting as if he had done something for Mandela, smiling and just so happy. And then way on page 49 was a $7,000 ad in the smallest of print, in the lightest of texture, with the words of the community saying no. What has to happen is what's happening hopefully on this day or on every day forward, to say that Mr. de Blasio must rescind the placement of that William J. Bratton, who carries such tragedy he carries. The parents are here that remember, you know, what it was like trying to get justice for their children that were killed, close to 138 people. And a lot of them were 13, 14 years old. Those parents are hurting to see that de Blasio, who took their vote, would then turn around and do this. Yesterday, we also heard he's putting someone from Goldman Sachs as the head of affordable housing. What lunacy is that?
How is that movement going? Is it picking up steam? Is it beginning
to sound? I think everyone, you know, thought they had a win, and they sat back and they said, ah. And then this happened, sort of like, you know, out of the blue, and immediately the press went with, well, let's give him a chance. Well, he's, you know, let's wait and see. And then what happened was they were very selective to go to the talented tents, as we call them, you know, the chosen selected organizations. And they put their stamp of approval. He met secretly with NAACP, for instance, but they did not. Well, in the vanguard, on the streets with cameras filming the police, going to court, they were locked out of the decision-making. And so now they are, those that were locked out are coming forth to say the conditions make it so that now we have to march again against the very people that have not even yet taken the seat of office, which is going to be January 1st. Now, there was a book that was put out, if you remember, Naomi Wolf had put it out a few years ago, called The End of America. And I saw the film, and I went to the village to see it, and, oh, she was there, and she spoke about how Bush was, you know, denying the protesting and was doing what, and it's the end of America, you know. But nothing in the book had about what the America had done to, say, the Panthers, or people that were, such as the MOVE organization. You know, she didn't look at, well, the end of America came also to our doorway, not just to the white college students who can no longer protest. So right now, I believe all the illusions of America, I think, are done. I don't think anyone believes the myth anymore of, we the people, you know, have the right to blah, blah, blah. We see what's going on in the courts. I think Reverend Lowy came out today about the disappointment in the appointment of the judges in the federal courts. So if every doorway is being blocked, and we can see it so clearly now. It's not just about teaching and removing the illusions. It's about now what are you going to do to prevent doing what they have planned to do.
Thank you so much, Agnes. That was extremely profound and in many ways echoed both Dolores and Annette about the need for people to become involved, and to engage and be prepared. It's a fight, but to be prepared to engage. Thanks so much, Agnes. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hi there, and happy holiday to you and all the listening audience. Well, let's see, the Republican Party, where the cruel rule. It's they're manufacturing, I've mentioned this in the past, but they're manufacturing poverty, actually. It's kind of their job. And the reasons, as I see it, is that, number one, to supply more prisons for the prisons for profit, more slaves for the prisons for profit. Because the war on drugs is winding down, and immigration from Mexico is winding down, and because they're investing $100 billion in their own infrastructure. So they need a new resource, a new source of slaves for the prisons for profit. Well, you take away people's food, and they'll commit crime if there's no other resource, and for their family, they will commit crime, and there's your new resource for the prisons for profit. America's answer to third world labor. But the thing is that they're putting us, the Republicans in doing so, are putting us all in harm's way because, number one, we're going to be the victims of the crime. When you take the food away from some people, they're going to want to get it somewhere. And we're all vulnerable out there. There's more guns than there are people in America. And second, malnutrition is the harbinger of disease. And so they'll be driving up the chances of epidemics and pandemics from the malnutrition, because that's when all disease moves in on people, when they don't have the proper nutrition. And as far as the bigger picture, I think they're working towards the TTP. The reason that they're cutting all the underpinning, cutting the sovereign, they're just taking America down, is because the Trans-Pacific Partnership will be the new world order. It is, I shy away from all that, one world order, but it does seem that way, and it's corporate, and they see us as the little people, and their answer to us is be afraid, be very afraid, and watch your TV, and so I feel this is a whole, what are we left with? Prisoners for profit and the army,
want to ask you a question, though, yeah. Harvey. I mean, you parked this bus in the Republicans' garage.
Uh-huh.
Is it just Republicans who are doing this?
No, there are Democrats. But, if you look at, for instance, when all the bills for renewable energy came up, the Republicans worked really hard to crush all the bills and take away so many jobs. There would have been so many jobs in rebuilding the American infrastructure, especially for renewables and solar and all those things. But they've done everything they can to repress and suppress all those jobs and keep us at a level where, we have to rely on, if you work at Walmart, you have to rely on food stamps. You have to, these corporations are all on the dole. They're all on social programs, and yet they look at us like lazy. This is a planned agenda to deliver us to the corporations of the world, I think, away from our sovereign government and away from our environmental rights and our own laws, which will all be leveled by the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I see this as a really big picture, and then we'll all be in prison.
But Republican, I'm concerned that you see it as almost exclusively a Republican issue.
No, it's not. It's a Democrat as well. No, absolutely. But it's mostly Republican, and I think that they are the, if you watch them, you'll see, the plan for America, and it's corporate. So. I don't know.
Thank you, Harvey.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And you?
I'm good. I would just like to thank you for yesterday's show. I thought it was one of the best shows that you've had in a long time, and it's always a great show when Alton is on. In regards to this situation with Bill Bratton, I guess it just goes to show how these politicians take advantage of people with the help of, you know, the clergy.
If I could interrupt a little bit, Trey, I just want you to identify who Bill Bradley is. Who Bill Bratton is.
Oh, he's going to be the new police commissioner of New York City.
Great.
And, you know, I remember back in the day when, you know, Alton, Sharpton, and the rest of them were out there protesting some of the egregious things that Bill Bratton was doing in the minority communities. And eventually they was able to get him out of here. He went on to Chicago and I think some other places. And basically
went on to Los Angeles and then to Boston.
Right. You know, and now it just seems like, you know, why would they bring him back? I don't understand it. And then in the process, you have someone like a Sharpton, you know, being at the forefront of saying that this guy is someone that will do a good job, but we will have to monitor and things of that nature. I'm really starting to wonder, at what time and what point is the black community going to start monitoring Al Sharpton? Because I had a friend of mine call me from Chicago yesterday, and, you know, I guess he's in Chicago with orders, I would say, from Obama to try and deal with this whole violence things that are going on there. And from what the brother was telling me was, he was there preaching voter registration, trying to get young people to register to vote, the 17 and 18-year-olds to register to vote. Now, me personally, I don't see where registering to vote is going to get us out of this condition that we're in. I mean, I think we need jobs. I think we need institutions that are going to do things to make our lives as African-Americans better. You know what I mean? So, I mean, at some point in time, we're going to have to start questioning this man, because I know no one in history that has been on the airwaves 7 days a week. You know what I mean? You got to think about it. What type of person would be on the airwaves 7 days a week spilling the type of rhetoric that he spilled if he's not anything more than a puppet and an apologist, and he's doing the job for the Obama administration in regards to this Affordable Health Care Act and all of these other things that are not so much in the best interest of, I think, our community. So I hope that in 2014 we will wake up, and I hope that you continue to be hard-hitting and expose, you know, the Obama administration. And one last thing, I don't know if you saw Susan Rice on 60 Minutes this last Sunday.
Just a snippet of it.
Oh, well, if you get a chance, maybe you could go back and review it, because they have it online. You know, it's amazing how dangerous that woman really is. I don't even think we as a people understand the type of affairs that she's involved with around this world and setting the policies to, you know, go about converting actions all around the globe for America imperialism. I mean, it's really crazy. One would be shocked. I don't know who's been more dangerous, her or Condoleezza Rice. I guess they both the Rices, so they both equally dangerous. But Utrecht, you have a beautiful holiday, and to your listeners, have a beautiful holiday.
Thank you very much, Jay. Thanks so much. Darko from Philly, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I just wanted to say thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you and your callers. And just very happy that you're back on the airwaves. You teach us to think very critically and analytically. I remember listening to you, as I said, in WBAI, and I just really missed you when you left. I wanted to say something that I've been hearing a lot of callers say. And what I realize about this country is it's not about helping us Africans. It never was. And I think we fail to look at history, not you or a couple of people, but the majority of us don't realize what this country is really all about. It's not about bringing jobs or helping us for the benefit of us. It's just never been that way. And by reading books such as Melissa Alexander or The New Jim Crow or other books that were written in the past from W.E.B. Du Bois, you have to say to yourself that, you know, the power elites or the white supremacy, as I've heard numerous times from callers, and even I see it for myself, that it's not for the benefit of African people. Just by listening yesterday in regards to what Alton Maddox said, he was absolutely right. I remember Jeffrey said it about 8 years ago. He said that if we as black people don't make a change immediately, we will be basically erased. And, you know, all this positivity, this, that, and the other that I'm hearing from other callers, it has nothing to do with us, really, because we've been trying from day one. Where's our 40 acres in the land? We've tried, and we've been wiped out. I'll tell you something. I am a registered nurse, and I'm in a program, and I work in the OR. And that's where you hear the racism from these physicians, white physicians especially. And they talked about, and I have to play a game. I can't respond. I can't say anything, okay? And they have mentioned about what happened in Philadelphia and how it was right that Mayor Good, I believe, bombed right. Operation Move.
Wilson Good, yes.
Well, yes. And but they were also, but it was very interesting that they mentioned the mayor before that was really responsible for the corruption and all the things that was happening and that was preventing African Americans from doing well. So I guess they were trying to say that it was the fault of the previous mayor because he was very, very corrupt. I think his name was Rizzo, I think.
Yeah.
It
was Rizzo.
I'm sorry?
It was Rizzo.
Yes, yes. And I was like, so they know, but, you know, they really didn't really talk too much about it. And that's something that we should always know. I knew about this when I was a little kid, but I didn't really know what really happened, but I was fortunate enough to have parents that constantly tell me what's going on in society. They always told me about my history. And that's something that I noticed that with my counterpart, since I was a child, a lot of these black parents, I don't know what they're teaching their children. You know, I don't know if they're teaching their children what's going on in society. I don't know, from listening to Like It Is, you could tell that, you know, maybe they were trying to talk about, like, to their children what was happening. But now at this age, you have children that hate themselves. You have, they don't see themselves as powerful. They don't see themselves as important. You see them emulating someone like Kanye West, who hates his race, basically. You know, you see these people that really don't care that these children are emulating. And I'm saying to myself, why are the parents or people that take care of them not teaching their children like my parents did? I mean, even when I say something, I hear these same people say, well, why do you care? Why do you always got something to say? And it's so frustrating. So, I mean, like I said, go ahead.
It's a very strange thing. And it is part of the work, really. You are a professional. You have achieved a certain level of education, and you're working in a very highly respected field and so forth. But yet, I'm hearing from you, as much as you have achieved, there is an insufficiency that is psychological, and that every day you're carrying this around, and many people don't understand that this, in fact, is true of a large percentage of the African-American community. They chalk it up to being, well, you're oversensitive, or even worse, why don't you just, get over it? You know, it's a new day, put this behind you, and move on with your life.
It's wrong. It is so wrong. I tried.
What's wrong about that?
It's interesting because I think I read this in W.E.B. Du Bois and also in another famous French African psychologist. I believe it's Frank, I forgot his name, Savon. He wrote White Mask, Black Faces.
No, that's, I'll remember in a minute. I'm getting a little old. It's from Martinique.
I'll email it to you, but it was very profound. And it basically talks about how we're just emulating or being Negro peons, basically. We're emulating the white social class, I believe, but we're never going to actually be who they are. My intention is not to be them. My intention is to get whatever I can and build what I want to build in Ghana or in Africa or even here. I've done that.
France Fanon. I just remembered her name.
That's it, yes. My intention is to go back, and I've been doing that. I've been participating in these types of events where I teach children about what I do. And they look
at you. But, you also have, if I sense it right, you also have the advantage of a cultural tradition that many people have really just jettisoned. And the cultural tradition that I think, what I'm hearing, the cultural tradition that you have is one of telling stories, one of passing information from one generation to the other.
Absolutely.
That has been brutally interrupted in the United States. People, I don't say it in the sense of blame, I say it as typical of any group that has suffered terribly on a psychological basis, to have to tell the story, they first have to recall it themselves. And it is a very awful thing. What they would prefer to do is to avoid a discussion of it, but to work to see to it that the travails that they experienced in their lives, that their children don't repeat it, but they generally don't talk about it. I've talked to many African Americans about that.
The difference between the Jews who constantly talk about the atrocities that happened to them? I mean, yeah, it happened in Germany and Poland and other areas where there was occupation, but they consistently talk about this stuff.
Yes, there's a reason, and it is also, it's a cultural reason and it's a political reason.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, at the time that the pogroms began against Jews, we had a lot of silence all around the world. People just said, we don't know what's happening. And then when it became unavoidable, then, of course, the intercession and people coming to the aid of the Jews and so forth. But the Jewish community itself compels their own community to remember, never forget. This is part of the cultural process. Do not forget. These things have happened, and they very possibly could happen again. Plus, the world has come around. A large part of the world that initially ignored Jewish suffering came around and said, well, we were wrong. We were remiss. And now overwhelmingly are in support of the Jewish community. This is a worldwide thing. So the difference with African Americans is, to begin with, African Americans did not have value as human beings. There weren't human beings. So human beings don't, animals don't suffer. The people who are less than people, you don't need to care about that group because they're not real. We're even generously evaluated us as being three-fifths of a person. And even
absolutely.
So, that was,
yeah.
That was a generous thing that they did. Mm-hmm. The fact is, when you have a complete dehumanization, total and complete, and there's no correction of the error, because the intention was to do exactly that, people walk around with lots and lots of psychological burdens that they dare not go back to because it would take a lot of energy to contain the anger. So they do it to themselves. They implode, or they just wreak havoc and violence on each other because that's who's closest to them. So there's a huge process involved in basically retrieving the missing pages of not just your history, but of your psyche. And for African Americans and Black people, many Black people all over the world, we're still in the process of finding the pages. It has not yet been complete. So in that process, you have a lot of things that go wrong. And it will take some time. Look how long it took for people to even use the word African and be okay with it. That was 40 years ago. Nobody wanted to be called African American. No. That was taboo. The damage is incalculable. But we have to develop a discipline of re-enculturating ourselves, getting to know ourselves, and that is a process of discovery.
I don't think it can happen in this system because Adelaide Stanford tried to put a curriculum of inclusion back in the 80s, and that was shot down. And I just feel like everything that we've tried to do in this type of system.
But it was shut down. This is what has happened. We have had people from among us who have risen and taken on a challenge. Alton Maddox, for example, in the legal profession. Adelaide Sanford, absolutely just incredible in the field of education. But there's no political protection for these people.
No. Mm-hmm.
So it frustrates the effort about the good things that they can contribute because what they have to offer, the people themselves do not value. They don't value it enough to protect it and to fight for it.
Like Kwame Nkrumah.
It's a different story. So
this is
the internal work that has to happen. And I don't say this in terms of faulting. I understand it in the scheme of things. I just wish that we can do a better job of educating each other about really what it is we are experiencing that looks like X, but it really is Y. Mm-hmm. We are doing things that look like alienation, that look like we don't care, that looks like apathy, and maybe it even is. But there's a deeper meaning there that we have to get into and become totally knowledgeable of and certainly not ashamed of. There are so many people who have told me over and over again that they never knew that their parents went through this experience or that experience in the South because they never talked about it. And it is typical of any traumatized person. There are many Jewish friends I have who said to me, grandparents, they don't talk about these things easily. And it waited late in life before they could even open up a small window. Things that are hurtful, we subsume, but it hurts us because we internalize the wounds. And we do ourselves the greatest amount of damage that way. But we see this time and again. This is a thing that has to happen. We have to be trained to understand really the psychological impact of slavery that continues to this day. It's a very, very traumatic thing. I'll tell you flat, I had no clue. I had never been through an experience like that, cultural experience, a shattering cultural experience, than when I came to the United States. I had never known that people actually lived in such a primitive way, a very inhumane kind of contract between and among people of different cultures. That's not the environment I came from.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had to learn about racism, not that it didn't exist in Trinidad, it's a different thing, but it was so deep and so obvious to me, and I was shocked at what it is I had to learn in order to navigate, you know, without incredible damage being done to me. I had to learn that fast.
It's funny because I was born here and I was told immediately that I am nothing, I'm ugly, but at home it was different. So I was going through this dichotomy. But when I went to Ghana, oh my God, I didn't want to leave because I was loved. You know, I was treated with so much, I was treated like a human, more than a human being. I was a princess, you know, I was part of something. But when it was time to take that plane going back to America, you just felt, you felt funny. You know, you felt that, mm-hmm. that kind of love, that kind of importance, that kind of support was not going to be met in the United States, you know?
Well, if we are in the midst of the ability to study, you study the native nations, the first nations of this country, and the ways in which they still have to fight to get their story, to assemble the missing pages, to pass that knowledge on, because they were just annihilated, obliterated. Any people going through that experience, it takes several generations before that animus basically, you know, is expiated. It takes quite a while to get to the root of it and then to understand yourself in an objective way about a very subjective treatment, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a long time. But thank you so much. You were very thoughtful today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Not that you haven't been thoughtful. I mean, reel that in real fast. But you have been very thoughtful in what you've offered today. Thank you so much.
Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you. Those of you celebrating, Merry Christmas to you. Basically, I'll take it easy and see if they have a good movie on. And I have some other things I need to catch up with. But I really do wish you the very best. Have a very thoughtful holiday. And let's come back here and build on this community in which we at least tolerate each other's frank opinions without screaming all kinds of crazy things we say. Well, that's the way the person really feels, and you have to honor that. And we don't have craziness going on here. We have good thinking people. Stay tuned right here. Coming up next, Economic Update with Richard Wolff. And we'll see each other on the 26th. Thanks so much for your participation today.